Is it even smart to find a new career in this shit show of an economy? And when is the right time? And how do you honor your truth and values despite capitalism, colonialism, and patriarchy being the complete opposite of your truth and values? Oh yes, we go there. And I'm joined by my friend and client, Luna Clara Munoz, a TEDx speaker and career coach for academic misfits, where we dive deep on how to find a meaningful career. All right, let's drop the beat.
Hey, I'm Elaine Lucartas. I'm a business and career coach for women of color and allies. LA Weekly awarded me the number one thought leader, and Apple News named me one of the top 5 business coaches. Done doing the most as a woman of color or ally? And you want to create your own definition of success and happiness? Well, grab your coffee, tea, or boba, and let's do some business and career real talk.
Legacy leaders, I have my client and friend, Luna Munoz. She's a doctor, but she did not want me to call her doctor because it was so formal. And you will get to know Luna because she ain't that boring. Not saying all people that have PhDs are boring. Anyways, I'm digressing. Sorry about that. So Luna has been a professor for 15 years in the UK, and she's been featured in TEDx, BBC, Chronicle of Higher Education. What people don't know is I also came from higher education as well. So there's a reason why both of us are no longer in it. And now what Luna does is you do career coaching, and I also know you do some grant writing. So you're helping people transition to more meaningful work. Anything else you want to brag about?
I didn't think I'd ever go back to higher education in any way, but I'm also being asked to do the International Women's Event at one of the universities in the UK, University of Reading. So that's amazing. And yeah, I feel good about going back. And then another university has asked me to help them with some coaching, and I'm doing coaching for another university. So I'm helping people while they're in academia to find better balance for themselves, because they need to look out for themselves if they're going to stay.
Yeah. I mean, it's hilarious, right? It's so often we do support people in our old industries, but it feels very nice to be not in it and helping from the outside. So today we're talking about how to find a meaningful career. So why is teaching this really important to you, Luna, when you work with your clients in terms of finding a meaningful career? And it might have a lot to do. Well, I know it does because you're my client and friend. What did you have to undergo to teach this?
I mean, I think part of it, and your story really resonated me when I first listened to your podcast.
She manifested to be a guest here, by the way. Congrats. But continue, continue. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just want to celebrate you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I came from, my parents are from Puerto Rico, and I grew up in Puerto Rico, and then I moved to the U.S. And all through my childhood, I think me and my family have really wanted to make a difference, you know, in whatever way that was. My dad was not perfect. He grew up in Spanish Harlem for a lot of his childhood and, you know, got into drugs and things like that. But while he was on drugs, a lot of times when he was off drugs, he was helping other people to not get on drugs or to kick the habit. I found out he went to a university to give a talk on helping drug users to kick the habit. I was like, I had no idea that he did that. And then my mom and I both volunteered at a crisis intervention hotline as soon as I could. You know, when I turned 18, I was doing that. And then I did my degree in psychology, applied psychology. And that's what my PhD is in, from University of New Orleans. And even while I was there doing my PhD, I did not get like any credits at all for doing this, but I hung out in family courts because the U.S. did not offer any kind of translation for the Dominican families that were going in there with their children, because their children were having trouble in school and, you know, getting in trouble with the law. So I just hung out in there. And then just like whenever the judge was like, Luna, I need you to come in because they don't speak English, because they were relying on the child to speak between the parent and the judge, is just so wrong. And so ever since, you know, I knew that I wanted to do something meaningful. But I got caught up in like the wanting to be significant and validated. That academia like took hold of my brain, and I wanted to like get a straight A. And if I had a gold star, I was like, oh my God, I'm worthy now.
Oh God, we're such millennials. Yeah. I know. I mean, I just think about it too. For me, it's like, I want that gold star. I want the green card. Please do not move the green card to the yellow card. My fellow millennials know what we're talking about. I want the 100% where you put the two zeros and put eyeballs on it and get the smiley face, right? And the stickers. And I mean, I'm not blaming our parents, but obviously immigrants, they had to survive here. And they didn't know what they needed to be successful or for their kids. And they just knew it's education because it was the one thing that they didn't have in the countries that they're from. And as first-gen immigrants, sometimes you take it to an extreme. We're like, okay, it's education to be successful. Let me go do all the things. And not even ask that deeper question of, what do I want? And understanding that privilege, right? Of like, wait, I understand and I'm very lucky that our parents didn't have that privilege of choice, but now I have that privilege of choice. What do I want? And we were also thinking that survival mindset. Is this resonating with you, Luna?
Yes,
or what's coming up?
Absolutely. My mom and I both got our undergraduate bachelor's degrees within like a year from each other from the same university because
oh,
she was
I
like,
love that.
This is the way we're going to get out of poverty.
And it's true. I mean, I can't say that education doesn't get you out of poverty. It does. But being too obsessed with it, it's like, you know, eating a lot of chocolate or drinking a lot of wine. Like, it's not good for you.
Yeah. And I was just in it. And even I had moved out to Los Angeles after I did my undergraduate degree in New York.
She left this country to the UK. That's fine. Whatever.
Eventually. But first I went to LA and I got a job at Warner Brother Records for a while.
Oh, wow.
I was a legal assistant, Warner Special Products. And it was a lot of fun. You know, I got to talk to Kip Winger, I don't know, and see like the ER cast and friends, and Chandler, you know, like waved at me from across the studio.
Rest in peace, Matthew Perry.
I know. And I kept telling people, I'm only here temporarily. I'm going to give my life to academia. Like, I want my job to be my life. And they just looked at me like, who is this woman?
And I think it's not that they were trying to traumatize us. I'm talking about our parents, but we just knew that in terms of like, we knew what the worst could be. God, like all the passive aggressive guilt trips my dad and mom would give me, you know, back in the Philippines, like we didn't even have food. There was a family of six of us, one fish and this big pile of rice, and you get to have half a fish, right? It's like, no, I need to give my whole life to that. I remember when I was working on a political campaign, one of my old bosses told me, Elaine, I mean, the campaign was over. We won. He was like, I want to help you. What do you want to do? What do you want to be? And I'm like, oh shit, I don't know the answer to this. I was like, you tell me what I should do. I'm like, wait, why am I asking someone what I want to do? And I never, and that's why I went back to therapy. I'm like, what do I want? So
yes.
I would love
therapy
to.
Therapy definitely helped me a lot.
Yeah. I've always been a huge advocate for therapy, and I am saying this as a coach, and I'm sure you agree with me. And if you don't, please be honest and while we're recording. If I had to choose between like, if you needed support, like with a coach or therapist, I would say a therapist, especially if you can't answer that question, what do you want to do? And if you can't answer that, no shame or guilt. I felt that way. I'm sure you did, Luna. And yeah. I had to do a lot of healing of what do I want versus what will make my parents proud? What does society and culture want? Anything you want to add to that, Luna?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, so I spent 20 years in academia, basically, like doing my PhD and then going to Sweden where I did a postdoc. And then I came to England. And then, you know, I was going to be laid off. I was up for redundancy. And I went to a therapist because my whole world was crumbling because that's all, you know, I thought that's all I wanted to do. Uh-huh. Obviously, from when I was a kid, that's not all I wanted to do. But, you know, because I wanted to help people. And I don't know how much I was helping people in academia. Anyway, so I went to a therapist when all this was happening. I was depressed. Plus I was in burnout, recovering from burnout, didn't even know it. And I went to a therapist and she said, well, what do you care about? What are your priorities? What are your values? And my only answer was, to be a professor? That's all I could think to answer with. And she's like, there must be something more. And I had no answer. And I felt so ashamed because I was like, how do I not even know what I want? I'm 40 something years old. How do I not know what I want? And working with her on what my values were, it was absolutely essential before I then left the university and started my own businesses, because I could not have been, I did hire a coach right out of leaving academia, leaving my job. And every week she'd be like, so you're supposed to create a funnel. So how'd you make on that? And I'm like, I'm still really depressed.
Yeah.
And it was just, I didn't go anywhere with that first coach that I hired, because I just, every week I just, she's like, what are your brand colors?
I know. And I say that because I have been there, right? Mm. There was this, I let go of my job, right? It was actually like a mutual ending. And it was in higher education because I was interim. So I had to apply for my own job that I successfully done, and I didn't get the job, which is fine because I started my own business. And I was like, I knew what I needed to do to get more clients, but I also needed to lay on my floor like a starfish and just cry and just be depressed and sad. And I needed to do that because, knowing myself, I can use work as a drug to not feel my emotions and feelings to heal. It's like a breakup, you know, like I really needed to feel that shit and know what I needed to work on. So, Luna, I mean, we're in an interesting place in this world with all the wars and just the economy. So is it even smart to find a cure in this shit show of an economy? And when is the right time?
I mean, yeah, it's not a good time. It's not been a good time for a while, you know, since 2008. That's when I was, you know,
oh my God, that sounds like last year, but it's not. That's almost 2 decades ago.
Gosh, it's horrible. And it's not felt like a safe, I've not felt safe for a very long time, you know, and especially because I still have student loan debt from the US. So I still have, you know, a lot of payback for that American dream. And
oh, that could be a different episode.
Oh my goodness.
Keep going.
So my way of thinking about it is we need to roll with the times. I realize that I adapt so well to moving from Puerto Rico, speaking only Spanish, to moving to the US, speaking only English, moving to Sweden, learning Swedish, moving to the UK, learning British English, you know, and then like learning the culture of academia as well. And I realized I'm actually quite adaptable. And the way that I thought about going and getting a new career after leaving academia, it just didn't feel safe anymore. I didn't feel safe in any of those environments. It's still the same structures. It's still the same, you know, kind of colonialist, patriarchal cultures within those organizations. Because I applied and got director level interviews at, you know, think tanks and foundations and, you know, things like that. And I know you've worked in the nonprofit industry. And I just saw the same thing. I was like, I don't really actually think this is different than academia. I think I'd still be the same. I mean, you can tell me what I would have experienced.
No, I mean, I'm kind of saying, it's not my words, but one of my former clients and colleagues, she was like, the nonprofit sector in higher education is like sneaky capitalism. You know, you're doing good work in the world. And they use that to their advantage, like the bureaucracy of it, of like, that's why you should work long hours, get paid shit. Like, hey, can you stay longer for the kids? Can you do it for the kids?
Absolutely. I mean, there is like no freaking lie right there. I'm just like listening to you and going.
And that's kind of the unfortunate thing. It's because a lot of people like us, whether first gen immigrant or they've gone through like a really tough life, it's like we want to give back. That's just our natural inclination. And yet we sometimes get abused by the system. Like I remember I was at, and this is before DEI was a hot topic in 2020. So I want to say this was probably 2013. And I was at like a staff workshop, and it was a DEI conference. And guess who was speaking? Two white people. And as they were teaching how to be more like DI values based, I was like, I could teach this. I should be paid for this, not them. It's just fascinating. Anyways.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's the important part is that I try to help people with what can you do, not just skills wise, but that's going to make a difference, but that's sustainable for you. You know, I know you use the word sustainable a lot, but like there is something to that. There is something to, you want to make a difference, but you need to look out for yourself. And a lot of the skills that people have, they don't realize that their own lived experience is valuable. And I think that's the big revelation that I've had this year in connecting with what my father had done, you know, because I really saw him as a failure because he hadn't graduated high school and he never got like a career. And, you know, he was a nobody to me is what, you know, I use air quotes, but like, that's what I, you know, I feel ashamed that I felt ashamed of him. But he died when I was a teenager. But he, you know, I reconnected with like, who was he really? And a big thing that I learned was that he could connect with people like you wouldn't believe. He could see people's like auras or whatever you want to talk about, but he could really see the real person. And I felt like, I feel like that's a strength I have. Do you know what I mean? And I honor that.
Yeah.
And I think there's more too. I could call myself like a business coach or a consultant or a research, you know, expert, but it's really about the qualities that I bring to that, because it's not, you could just talk about my skills, but there's something to them. And I think that's where the real like career building in this day and age is, that's where it's at. Like you said, your DEI and you delivering that would come from a totally different place that people would connect at a deeper level than somebody who is white and hasn't had any form of oppression that they've experienced. I mean, maybe if they were, you know, grew up in like a bad poverty. Neighborhood or poverty, like they could have some idea of oppression. But I think there is something to, we have more to give than our skills that you list on a freaking resume. Do you know what I mean? There's much more to us.
So I want this to be applicable to our listeners. So what would you recommend then to our listeners as they're like, I hate my job, I hate this industry. What can they start doing then? So I think you started talking about like writing down what they love doing, their strengths, right? Anything else you want to add to that?
I think my big thing, I'm such a community advocate. Like I never do anything without having a big support network. And I feel like I was just talking to a client earlier. Academia feels like you're an island. You never get to work with other people because you're supposed to be like a thought leader or you're supposed to be like a principal investigator or the lead author or whatever it is. It's always like there must be like a person at the helm, which is, again, very patriarchal and very colonial. And I'd never liked working like that. So when I left, I started to gather information about what people felt were my biggest like strengths and qualities. So not just me writing them down, but asking and crowdsourcing strengths from everyone and going like, when you think of me or when you worked with me, what were like the top three words that come to mind?
You know,
it's amazing.
And I want to validate that because I did that. I went to people when I knew I would transition. Hey, whether it's even having your own business or just changing careers, like, I would love to ask you, what would you say my strengths are? I notice you constantly come to me for advice. Why do you come to me for advice about this? What specific topics and issues do you talk to me about? Because it's so natural for us. Sometimes we think like, oh, everybody knows how to make chocolate chip cookies. When in reality, it's just really super easy for you. And that's why during holiday parties, people keep asking you to make chocolate chip cookies. I know I'm talking about cookies, but like it could be a certain skill set too, right? Like, or Elaine, help me with this presentation. I'm like, oh, maybe that's it. But I will say when I was thinking of transitioning and not even to my own business, but even from the political sector to the nonprofit sector, I was like, hey, what are my strengths? And like, you listen, you're a great networker. You know how to follow up. I'm like, okay. I think I still wanted to be a fundraiser, but just definitely not in the political sector. So let's try nonprofit and higher education. And it was at the time a really good fit. And I don't have the story of like, I hated my job. I had an incredible mentor. Shout out to Bobby Abram, my old boss. And she really invested in me, helped me with the conferences, encouraged me to get my master's. Then again, I realized I was people pleasing, not at her fault, but I was people pleasing. And I was very bored. It's very slow in the higher education system.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get out of it. So I heard is putting a list, asking people. And I also want to encourage that because unfortunately, since 2020, people are like Googling online and YouTube. That's very helpful for resources. But remember, we heal in community. And for those in higher education, think of this as a qualitative study. And now I'm saying those words. You're doing a qualitative study, a focus group, asking people that you trust and love to give you feedback.
Exactly. Yeah. I had one person actually create a survey and sent it around to all of her department.
Yeah.
Like really gathering information that you could quantify as well. So quantitative research as well.
Yeah. And I would say, I know people say surveys. I like the qualitative, not because I'm an extrovert, but because you pick up on words people use to describe you.
Yeah.
And when you pick up on those words, that's where you could update your LinkedIn if you want to change careers. Or if you want to start your own business, then you're using those words.
Yes. I did it too, because I thought I would building another career, but I ended up building my own business in the end. Like I said, because I did the interviews and I didn't feel like the nonprofit world was for me. But yeah, getting those words. And also, it just gives you a boost. If you're feeling low one day because you've applied to however many jobs or you haven't gotten a client yet, you just open up that list of what people have said about you and you just have an immediate boost of like, I am like, people do get things like positive things from being with me. And here's my proof of it. And sometimes we do need that proof. It's nice to have your own sense of self-worth, but sometimes it is nice to have a little bit of a boost.
I mean, I hope you're okay with me sharing this, but even as I've been working with you, not just that list, and not just you, but a lot of all of my clients, including myself, where it's like, what else? What more can I do? It's like, Luna, what is working? And then Luna will look at her beautiful dashboard of leads. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm not getting clients this way. I'm getting clients this way through like my referrals, going to networking. And it's like, yeah, then focus on what's working for you. And whether it's your business or even your career, like, oh, people come to me for this. Maybe I want to do this.
And I think when you were saying things that come easy to you, there's also things that come easy to you, but drain your energy. And then there's things that come easy to you that give you energy. And I've been really talking to my clients about what are the things that give you energy? Things that so one of my clients used this phrasing and I loved it. You know, why do you keep not playing by the playbook? Why do you keep rejecting the playbook that you know is exactly how you get ahead in your career, but you're not doing those things? It could be you're like really obstinate and I'm kind of pathological demand avoidant in a way, but it could be those are the things that bring you energy and the playbook is telling you or the rule book is telling you to do it in a different way than what you find to be fulfilling. And it's going to lead to those kind of like cynicism and resentment if you're constantly being told that you're doing it wrong, but for you, it's the right way. So I talk about, you know, it's about finding the right match, you know, in terms of that meaningful career. It's about finding the way that you thrive. And I think when you find the thing that is easy or that gives you light and that kind of sense of purpose and that meaning, it's a complete, you know, game changer at that point. And I think, you know, there is a way to kind of puzzle piece things together because, yeah, you know, some people say, how can you have a meaningful career if it's not going to pay you well? But I think there's ways to puzzle piece things together where, you know, you're making good money off of maybe like a corporate partnership or in a good career where you don't have to spend 80 hours a week. And that gives you time to do the volunteer work that you want to do. Like I have much more time to do the girls network where I mentor young girls from, you know, disadvantaged communities because I'm not working the 80 hours a week that I was.
Legacy Leader. I know what you're thinking. Elaine, you have such good stuff here. I want more. So if you want more tips and advice for your business, career, and life, sign up for my Gifts and Gifts newsletter at elainelu.com/join. That's J-O-I-N. And here's three things you'll get when you join, because I'm like Santa Claus. I love giving. Number one, funny gifts, because who doesn't love memes and pop culture references? This newsletter is so fetch. Number two, receive actionable gifts. That's business, career, and life tips that you can start doing today. Third, the gift of me. Not only do you get my wins, but also my failures, my reflections. My Gifts and Gifts newsletter is like an up-to-date diary. Think Zynga or Life Journal for my fellow millennials, where I share vulnerable stories, relatable mistakes, and important life tips like what to watch on Netflix, like when's the next Bridgerton season. So if you're ready for those fun gifts and actionable gifts to create a more sustainable life, then join my newsletter at elainelu.com/join. That's J-O-I-N. All right, let's get back to the episode.
I know. I remember you did a post on LinkedIn a couple months ago. I think when you started working together, you had a big month and you were taking care of your sick kid. And before that, volunteering, and you weren't working much.
Yeah.
I think the unfortunate thing, and like I said, not blaming the generations before us, is that like we were taught to work hard so that we didn't have to feel the pain or go through poverty again. When what if it's not about doing all the things? Like, for example, even in this new year, I've owned up. I just want to work with 24 clients at one time to ensure client results, one. And then two, in terms of my volunteering and giving back accessible education, it's this podcast. Like, yeah. It takes me about an hour to prep, another 30 minutes to an hour to record like we're doing right now, and then 2 hours for my team that I pay to edit. This is my way to give back. And that's how I honor my values. So that goes to the next question. How can our listeners honor their values, get paid what they need to get paid to live the lifestyle they want? I'm not saying private jets, but even like at least a vacation once a year, or being present with their kids or their aging parents. How can listeners value themselves despite capitalism, colonialism, and patriarchy that doesn't honor that?
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I've been struggling with a lot this year in terms of really honoring my value and what I bring is how much I thought I had to struggle. You know, like, as you were saying, our families have struggled and it's all about like working hard, you know, and even like, I mean, you could take it as far as my mom saying, like, we've walked a lot today. We deserve an ice cream cone. Like, we just deserve things, not because it doesn't need to be tied and linked to our
pain than pleasure.
And I've always, and then when I get something beneficial, when I get that kind of accolade or that pleasure, whatever it is, and I haven't worked hard or I haven't struggled for it, in some ways I feel like I don't deserve it. I don't know if other people feel that way, but I have felt like, if I'm not struggling and fighting all the time, then I haven't really deserved what I've gotten. And I'm trying to get out of that mindset, because I know a lot of people talk about like money mindset, but I think there's something about that fighting mindset, you know, the ease and the rest, and that things can be simpler and easier and you can still deserve what you're getting, the good things that you're getting. And I think that's a big mindset shift that I've had in the last couple, and like, yeah, pretty much the last couple of years since I started my business, because I was tying my worth to that pain, to that struggle. And I think it's, you know, it's common, especially like when you come from countries where all that's, it's always been a struggle. We struggle against hurricanes and, you know, earthquakes in Puerto Rico. It's always a struggle to get, it's a community struggle against the elements, against, you know, the colonialist structures that we're already in, against Trump throwing frickin' paper towels at people, you know, like that sort of stuff. It's like, it's always been a struggle. But at the same time, when I think back to the Puerto Rican struggle, it's always been accompanied by dancing. You know, there's always been salsa dancing. There's always been merengue. There's been bomba, plena, you know, like, and it's always with music. Every time they go on protests, like, everybody has a big band. You know, Ricky Martin was, you know, on stage, and like Bad Bunny, you know, like that kind of stuff. It's like, it's always got dance. And so I love like going, you know what? A fight is like a dance, and we can blend and flow between the two. And sometimes you do need to struggle, but sometimes you can just wave and wave your body with the music and go with the flow.
Oh, I love that. And I also want to add, like, when it comes to honoring our values, despite capitalism, colonialism, patriarchy, something that I've had to unlearn when I got into this business coaching, and actually even in higher education or nonprofit, because in higher education, it's like more, get your master's, get your PhD. I'm like, okay, get all these degrees and be in debt. What the fuck? And then in business, it's like, do all the things, more courses, do one-to-one, do group, get as many clients as possible, grow your team. And I was caught up in that. I was like, okay, let me go do all the things. And then burnout happened. And then at the end of last year, I was just took the ownership. I'm like, you know what? I'm good. I just want to work with 24 clients at one time, and to honor the quality of my coaching, like at the minimum, have a 60-minute one-to-one, have my office hours twice a month, have the other coaches, have my retreat. And I know Ivy Leagues could be a problem. I've talked to you about this, Luna, but I want people to know that it's competitive to work with me and my team. Like, we're marketed more all the time, like buffets. I think that's an American concept, right? And even for my immigrant parents, like, and I have two brothers who just, that's why I ate fast, because if I didn't eat it, my brothers would steal my food. They wouldn't even steal it. They would get it off my plate. So I saw them getting the food out. But it's like, well, we have two growing boys and also a girl. Let's just go to a buffet and feed them. Like, this concept of more, and just like,
yeah,
when you get the latest iPhone or new phone, it's like, that wasn't a thing when we were teenagers.
Yeah.
You know, getting a new phone every year. So, Luna,
I have so many clients though, like, who are getting like second PhDs, like, to leave their job. And I'm like, tell me about what you do in your job. And they don't need another degree or another qualification. And, but that's the way, like, you know, education kind of works, is like, oh, you want to start out at a high level making good money, you have to have a higher degree. And there's people out there making billions that don't have a degree in like business at all. You know, like, you know, I don't know the billionaires, yeah, but you know, a lot of them don't even have degrees. And so, I mean, not that I'm saying that like we should ignore experts and that, you know, degrees don't mean anything, but do you really need a degree to change your job or to go into business? Do you need a business administration kind of degree to go in and have your own business? Probably not, you know?
Yeah. And
yeah, I think it's just like honoring the skills that you've been acquiring. If you've been in your job for 10, 15 years, 20 years, there's so many skills you're not even realizing because they just come so easily.
And so I had the fortunate experience working at a community college in California, Pasadena City College. And what's great about it in comparison to the 4-year, where I know a lot of 4-year institutions like promote like, hey, get this degree, do research, get your master's and PhD. What I really appreciate about community college is like, okay, technical skills. Like, you want to do automotive? Great. We have a program for that. You can make 6 figures in it. You know, you want to be an electric technician? We have a program for that. Are you a parent? Then they have like dental assistant. Like, it was like really beautiful technical jobs where it wasn't just promoting like do research, get above, but it's like, if you're hands on, you want to do this, you can have a successful career doing that. And I want to go to the next question. Like, what advice do you have for people to start living their truth?
I think bring creativity back. You know, we did a lot of play in schools, you know,
yes,
from like a very early age. We did a lot of play. Curiosity, you know, I wonder how this works. Then, you know what I mean? And then we all had to sit down and be quiet and and give kids like medication to get them to stay quiet, right? I mean, you know, medication is good in some instances, but I do feel like if we didn't have to like sit still, and you know, kids don't go to school in Sweden until they're 7 years old. you know, and they're learning at home. They're playing and they're reading and, you know, with their
parents. Social skills. Yeah.
And social skills. And we know like how important that is. And those are the big skills gap that a lot of industries, I've done consultancy with industries to find out what are the big skill gaps that are going to be in the pipeline in the next 5 years for like small and medium, you know, enterprises. And the big things are leadership skills, analytical skills, like communication and being able to work on a team. Those are the big like skill gap. I mean, obviously like green skills and then, you know, mm-hmm. like digital skills and things like that. But, you know, a big part of it is like leadership skills, which is soft skills. But I do think there's something about finding who you are and what you want. And going back to what we were talking about in the beginning, you know, finding a therapist. I know that you are vulnerable in sharing your EMDR journey. Mm-hmm. And that's what I had as well. It was such a big transformation for me. And finding out how to trust myself, because I think it's really hard.
That was the hard part. That's exactly what I worked on in my therapy sessions. How to trust myself. And what is my voice? And is it my voice or is it someone else's?
Yes. Yes. One of my clients said that. She was like, but how do I know whose voices I've been listening to all this time then? Because all I've thought of is the next, if I'm a lecturer, then I'm a senior lecturer or assistant professor to associate professor to professor. And that's what I've thought the like ladder has to be. And instead it can be my ladder includes, you know, playing and hula hooping and creating like birimbau to play capoeira, you know? So yeah, I think it's trust. It's belief and trust is a big element to it, especially if you're leaving a career and going into a new career, trusting that what feedback you're getting from your managers, your uh-huh. line managers, that's genuine, that they want the best for you. It's so hard because if you come from a toxic work environment, you then have no trust. And when you hear something positive, you're thinking, why'd they say that positive thing? It's really because they think I'm doing poorly, isn't it? You know, like you can't even trust the positive and the praise. And the same thing when I was opening up my own business, because I didn't trust myself. I didn't trust my clients to invest with me at the level that like I felt they kind of like would get the best benefit in some ways. And when you don't have that level of trust for yourself, it's really hard for you to open up and accept feedback and to want to improve yourself because you're constantly on this defensiveness and avoiding emotions, like you said. So that's something that I work with a lot with people. I think because of my psychology degree, even though I'm not a therapist, a lot of the work that I do with people is finding who they are, what they care about, and like finding that trust, that self-trust again, and not listening to the shoulds, the oughts, the...
Yeah, stop shitting all over yourself, you know?
and finding your new network of like badass cheerleaders, because life's too short to be with people who are going to say, oh, you know... But I mean, some people are going to be worried for you and fearful for you. And that's totally okay. Like, I don't, you know, I definitely validate people's worries, you know, that if they're like, you know, my mom might be like, are you sure you can make a job like this? Don't you have to go get a job? You know, how are you running your own business? But I think finding what you really believe in and trusting that you know the path, even if it's not paved with like concrete, but that you know your own path and you know that as you go down that path, other things will open up, opportunities will open up and they'll present themselves. I think that's it's a leap of faith, I suppose.
Yeah. And I think another theme here, it's like, you don't have to figure it out on your own. I know there's so much shame, like as a first gen immigrant, it's like, you can figure it out on your own because you have all the resources that I didn't have when I was a kid. But remember, we heal in community. I like giving the comparison of like, remember when our kids are teenagers and those small little problems like, oh my God, she doesn't like me. What do I do? But even talking to a friend about it was just so calming and healing, even if you didn't need a solution, but just talking about it. And I know everything's so digital and virtual, but there's also the beauty of it being easy to talk to someone. And if you ever feel like, oh, I don't want to be annoying, I don't want to be too much, then that's why I actually go to therapy, because I don't want to be annoying. You know those like friends that complain about their partners again. And it's like, dude, go to therapy. Anyways.
But the other thing is that you make relationships stronger and closer when you trust people and ask for help.
Yeah.
Because people love, if you ask somebody for help, you are saying, I am trusting you with my big problem.
Correct. And to be a good friend or colleague or coach or whatever it is, even asking when someone's going through a tough time, what do you need from me? Do you need me to hold space? Do you need feedback? Do you need advice? And majority of the time, I even find from my own clients like you, Luna, it's like, I just need you to hold space. I'm like, okay, cool. And this unfortunate thing is that, you know, this American Western culture that when someone's complaining, they want a solution. When the reality is they just want to vent and be human and have and hold space.
I want you to empathize with my thirstiness.
Yeah.
That was from a movie, wasn't it?
I don't
when she says I'm thirsty and he's like, I got you a drink of water. Or she was like, no, I wanted you to empathize.
Oh my gosh.
I think it's Pulp Fiction, actually.
Yes, it is. So what is one big takeaway our listeners should take away from this episode? One takeaway or one action item?
A big takeaway is connecting with your values, your priorities. I don't know if that's two things, but it's kind of one thing all wrapped into one big, you know, you. And I say that every time, you know, the connecting with who you are and what your priorities are. In terms of action points, I would go through what kind of life you want to be living, you know, because I think so many times we think about the career first or the job first and then go, how can I build a life around it?
Yeah.
And I think it's empowering and daring and, you know, revolutionary and yeah, everything that we shouldn't do is to build the life first and then find the career that will fill, like that will fill in around that fulfilled life. So I think that's like number one, finding out what's going to make you happy, what's going to make you feel like life is worth living.
And Luna, I'm sure people have fallen in love with you. So if people want to find you, work with you, connect with you, how can they do that?
Well, my website is lunaleadership.com and I'm on LinkedIn as Luna Clara Munoz. And yeah, I sometimes dance on TikTok.
That's a Puerto Rican in her, by the way. It's not because she wants a trend, okay? It's because she's Puerto Rican.
I just find a cool sound and sometimes I want to dance. And a lot of times we get clarity through movement. So,
oh my God, yes. I mean, I do Muay Thai and I talk to you about it. But like the biggest lesson I learned from my own Muay Thai coach this past week, it's like, my name is on the line and everyone's form is shit. And I don't care if you're not fighting professionally, but I have a reputation to uphold. So I'm going to be teaching all the courses or all the classes this week and correct your form. And we're going down to basics. And that was such a good lesson for me where I'm like, okay, I need to be picky with the people I work with. And there's just and not that I was seeking it for business advice, but there's just things you take away from dance or fighting that you can apply in your own life. And to do a hobby and not be attached to making money out of it is very nice, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I could not live if I didn't have these, like dancing. And I just started belly dancing last week and it was amazing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's just, I mean, we're doing this early, this recording this episode early at 8 a.m. Pacific. I know you're in the UK. I just love movement. But anyways, I also wanted to ask Luna, if there are people that are interested working with me, and since you've worked with me, oh my God, 4 months now, what or advice would you have for folks about how it's been working with me and any results you want to share?
I mean, I haven't even told you my wins from the last couple of weeks, but it's just, I was just nominated for the Latin American Awards in the UK for Best Entrepreneur. And I feel like since I've been working with you, things have been a lot easier and I felt a lot more trust within myself that I did not have before, or it was very tenuous. You know, I'd go through moments of like, I feel okay. And then what am I doing? I'm not doing all the things. And I've had so much more consistent income since working with you, even though I've dropped things that were bringing income, but I hated doing. And so it's just gotten more clarity, you know, more focus, and trusting that the direction that I'm opening up towards is going to yield sustainable income in a way that makes me feel like I'm doing meaningful work, but that I'm not overworking myself or burning out. And that's the hugest impact that I can tell about a coach. And it's just been so different from my other experiences in exactly that way. And also you get me, do you know what I mean? You get like what, when I say something, you can understand where it's coming from and also how it might be holding me back in some ways, and how to just open up my mind to another possibility of business, of doing business.
It's been so beautiful, like working with you, and love seeing your growth. And it was funny because a lot of the work we did in the beginning, I was like, yeah, like you ain't no like, oh my God, uptight professional. You are funny. Like, let's bring that out. And then I remember like within the first week, Elaine, oh my God, these clients are coming to me. And then you're changing yes. copy on your website. I was like, this does not sound like you from the person I am talking on Zoom.
Yeah.
And it's like, Elaine, I ended this collaboration. I'm so scared. Oh shit. There's all these clients coming. Oh, look, I got this award. And also more importantly, being present with your kid, Jin Cabrera, like,
yeah.
So if you are interested in working with me, being one of the 24 people to work with me, because that's how much I work with, and you get 3 action items, doing a complimentary call, then schedule a call at elainelu.com/call. And if you are in academia, you want to transition and you're feeling Luna's energy, go contact her, find her on LinkedIn, Luna Clara Munoz. Did I say that right with the accent?
Oh my goodness. That's okay. Amazing. I love it.
Well, I mean, the Spaniards colonized my country, so.
Yes.
Gartas.
Mine
is,
too, first one.
Yeah. Gartas
the
is.
The first ones.
Yeah, we were the first ones. I mean that sarcastically. Luna, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. You'll never get rid of me now.
Yeah. I'll give you a ring. Bye.
If you learned a lot on what you can do to find a meaningful career, here are 4 things if you feel called to do them. Number 1, if you could leave a 5-star review and rating, that would mean a lot to me and my team. We created this podcast for accessible education for women of color and allies, and each episode takes about 4 hours to create. It takes me 1 hour to prep and another 30 minutes to 1 hour to record. Then my team spends another 2 hours to edit and market. Number 2, because we care about accessible education, share this with a friend who is having such a hard time in their job, and they need to know that they're not alone. Number 3, don't forget to hit that follow button and subscribe button. When you hit that button, it allows the interwebs to do their thing, do their magic, and let fellow women of color and allies like you know that there's a podcast like this out there. And number 4, if you would like to create a more meaningful career and you want to work with me and my team, then schedule an introductory legacy business and career audit call with me. I only work with 24 clients at one time to ensure each client receives the results they deserve. You can schedule a complimentary legacy business and career audit call at elainelu.com/call. That's elainelu.com/call.